Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cause podcast. I'm Matt Cause. That's Bob Mackowitz. Bob, just stacked for actual sports topics.
So much happened. I think the phrase is, it's all happening.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, the Brooklyn Nets alone could give us an hour of talk. You got the Leafs beating Montreal. You got NFL coming up. It's really just you spin the wheel of topics and all of them are good.
The most interesting one has to be the Harden one because it's cultural as well as just sports. But we got to start with the Leafs, mm-hmm. Right?
Absolutely. Beat Montreal 5-4 in overtime. Where do you want to begin? There's a lot of guys that, like, for me, my biggest story was John Tavares. Goal to assist. Yeah. Well, because on one level, you noticed him the entire game. And there was lots of stretches last year where he felt invisible. And one stat that jumped out at me, he had 3 shots on the power play. Okay. But he went his first 9 games last year without even registering a shot on the power play. So Tavares, to me, that was my first takeaway.
Okay, so I've got a game for us to play because it's the first game of the season, and really it's a preseason game in the sense that they've had one scrimmage and now they're into games that count. So all of this, like the beginning of a season at the best of times, is a poor way to make decisions about what's going to happen, but more so this year than ever. So I've got a game for us to play called How Much Does It Matter? Because there's no way in this market that this stuff won't matter.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, how much should it matter?
All right.
And one of the questions was, how much does it matter that Tavares is in his 30s now? And I'm assuming by what you just said, you think very little because you think he's going to return to his place as a dominant center in the league.
Yes, absolutely. So I'm going all in on that what we saw there, that matters.
Can I throw my, like, I was excited to see Tavares play with excitement. I was excited to see him rewarded. You always wish he was a little faster, but he does so many things well, and he's a damn good player. But you know what I thought we saw last night was the beginning of Nylander emerging in earnest as the guy who's going to drive that line. I'm not saying that JT is going to be a passenger or whoever winds up on the other wing is going to be a passenger, but I think, I don't want to call him ascendant because that's too strong, but clearly Nylander just feels like a 30-goal guy and somebody who's going to drive play. I don't know in this market that he's ever going to get the credit he deserves for that, but as much as I loved Tavares last night, I love that Nylander felt like the best thing about that line.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, the first goal, long shot, bunch of bodies in front of Price. He assisted on the VC one that I thought was maybe his best play. Quick snipe on the power play. Absolutely. Like Nylander got the first star last night. He deserved the first star. I guess for me, it was just because last year was sort of a down year for Tavares. So to see a bounce back game was a bigger story. What we saw from Nylander last night, we saw a lot of that last year.
I think the first star last night for the Leafs was Shea Weber in the sense that when he flipped the puck over the glass and they wound up going 2 men down with just a little bit left in the second and they scored again. We talk about the Wayne Simmonds fight as a momentum changer, and I'm sure we'll get more into that later, but I don't think enough was made about the fact that they had a 2-man advantage and they capitalized and that their power play looked really, really good and that they feel again like the Leafs, and this goes to Tavares, who looked good on the power play. The fact that they have 2 balanced units that can really do damage. This was the Leafs that we thought we were going to see last year, that were going to pummel teams on special teams.
Yep.
If they can keep something, a reasonable facsimile of a dangerous power play up, I think it's going to bode well for them all year. Obviously.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And by the way, when it was that 5-on-3, my normal reaction is I prematurely get angry because it is my number one hate thing in hockey. If your team is an extended 5-on-3 and you don't score, it's just the most deflating thing as a fan.
It's interesting you say that. I felt anxiety because you're right. It felt like if they didn't score, it was their way of saying, we're not going to win tonight, but we have another period to go.
Yeah.
There's something so demoralizing. Like, it's somewhere between a stuff in basketball and getting hit by a pitch in baseball when you don't score on the 5-on-3.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly it. So, yeah, I immediately get a little bit upset, but whew, you know, no need to there. And you're right. That is a good point about Shea Weber and flipping the puck. And, you know, I mean, I guess Shea, he wanted to take a break from using his stick to whack Austin Matthews in the lower back over and over again. Yeah, there was a lot of cross-checking going on, Matthews.
Yeah, and he better get used to it. Well, okay, so I got this game. It's called How Much Does It Matter? We've kind of officially started. So why don't I just dive in with one that everybody's talking about today? How much does it matter that Wayne Simmonds fought in the second period and then challenged the bench to lift their game?
I think it matters a lot because the Leafs have never had that. And, you know, there was always the talk of, oh, they look a little lifeless out there, or they're going through the motions, or all these other things. And what I love is people trying to debate it, going, oh, everyone's going to talk about Wayne Simmonds when really it was Nylander. Here's the thing. It's both, you know, and here's how I know it's big, because the player said it was big, because Joe Thornton said, quote, it pretty much changed the whole game. I'm not going to do the downplay, the fight thing that I know certain sectors of hockey fans are going to do. It was a big deal.
I sent out a Leafs in 6 words last night. I sent out 3 of them, but one of them was, being honest, I kind of miss fighting.
Yeah.
I have a certain thrill / anxiety when I see a fight now, particularly involving our team, which we haven't had to worry about very much in a while. You don't want to see anyone get hurt, and we're so aware now of the consequences that it is a guiltier pleasure than ever. That said, there is something, I like boxing, I like UFC, I can't be a hypocrite. There's something about a display of a desire to win that transcends other sports that you see it in hockey. And it's just different than a big hit. You know, it's different than taking a charge. You know, maybe it's an artificial distinction and I'm making too much of it because culturally I'm used to it and I've been told this is what it is. But I'm going to throw a question at you. This is sort of a big picture question. Yeah. Comes out of Wayne Simmonds, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Let's say, for argument's sake, that the analytics group are right and it has absolutely no impact on the outcome of a game. Does it matter if the fans like it?
Well, I for me, it's, do the players like it? The one problem with analytics is it's not going to take into account emotion.
I agree. You're changing the question, though, a little bit. And I think this is an important one about what we think a sport's job is to do. If a sport or a team, like the purpose of this entertainment vehicle that we call hockey, if it is to create the best example of the sport, like if the goal is to watch it played at its highest level, then fighting doesn't matter. If it's to stimulate the emotions of the crowd or to activate some kind of narrative inside of our brains that we enjoy, like a TV show, if it's more of a TV show, well, then fighting does matter, because even if it didn't impact the outcome of the game, it made me feel like they care. And if the number one sin in sports is not caring about the outcome, then it's not winning or losing that pisses fans off more. It's, are you actually trying? And if that's of someone trying, then it has a place.
Then put me in, it has a place. You know, we'll get to James Harden in a bit. That's the biggest sin, was he wasn't trying. He didn't care anymore. And he threw every member of his team under the bus, and he did it in a public way. But again, by the way, Bob, I think we need to do a segment called That Being Said, where you do on the front end, you do all the right things, you know, well, we have to worry about the player's safety. That being said, I love when a safety knocks a receiver off on his ass. I want to say, but that being said,
I had this radio consultant once tell me, when you use the word but, you're informing the audience that everything they just heard is false.
Yes, of course. Of course. I enjoyed it. The players enjoyed it.
Why don't we do that segment? We could. We have a pod.
Yeah.
That being said, In fact, we can probably apply a few of those to the Harden situation, which I'm sure we'll get to in a second. Simmons didn't look especially great last night. You know, he's kind of slow. Yeah. He's a little clunky. He probably played better than he has in a while because he's healthy and rested. But I don't know how much a guy like that is actually going to contribute to offense or defense for that matter. But we all know this to be true. The Leafs were lackluster in the leadership department last year. They were easily knocked off their game. They were sort of, I don't want to use the word indifferent, but teams felt they could push them around. And I think that's as much psychological as it is physical. So whether it's Simmons fighting or it's Joe Thornton trying to keep up with, like all of these symbolic victories, I think we have to concede at a certain point have value because the Leafs don't need more talent, or they certainly don't need much more talent. They have all the talent they need to be an elite team. What they need is a winning attitude. I will debate this with anybody, no matter how analytics driven you are. Enthusiasm is the final leg of the race.
And to add to that, Bob, that it's not about size. It is about attitude and psychology. I remember last year when the Leafs, you know, when we were talking Leafs Bruins, you looked at the average weight and size. The Leafs are bigger than Boston. But Boston was the team always pushing them around. So, yes, you need that from a Wayne Simmons, who isn't going to make that much of an impact. You know, Matthews played over 25 minutes. Marner played just under 25. Sheldon Keefe is just going to play the most important players a ton of minutes, like nothing we've ever seen before. It's just Wayne Simmons and the third and fourth line of guys, you know, that aren't the high-paid players. They got to pick their spots, and when they pick them, they better pick correctly.
So, Cause, I'm going to make an analogy that you're going to love.
Woo!
The Boston Bruins, in this case, are Matt Cause. Let me explain. At TSN 1050 and throughout your career, you've always been the hardest working guy in the room. Or at the very least, tied for number one, because nobody ever outworked you. And that's every single day in every single capacity. If you thought there was one more thing you could do to make the show better, you did it. Didn't complain about it. And I have seen you raise the game of the people around you because you try. You try from your heart. And anybody who kind of cares even a little sees that and wants to be part of it and certainly doesn't want to let you down. And I've also seen you, and you are very, very reluctant to do this, but I have seen you take people to task if you feel like they have gone too far and are now disrespecting the gig. And you're allowed to do that because you don't disrespect the gig. All of this matters. Winning culture is a thing. You know, talent is like being born rich. It certainly helps an awful lot, you know, but in the end, rich people piss it away sometimes. It's not a guarantee of anything. And I think enthusiasm and willingness to work is the difference. So the Bruins were you, Maddie, and the Leafs need to become you.
Ah. Well, first, I appreciate. Thank you for that compliment. And by the way, in terms of the working hard, that John Tavares stat, I found about 3 shots on the power play and first 9 games without them. I read that like right before we came on. I made sure to cut and paste that into my script. But you've nailed it on just the attitude thing and just enthusiasm. And it seems so obvious, but you know, when you do a job day in and day out, sometimes it is something as simple as enthusiasm that's going to put you over the top.
I think it's the biggest thing, Matt. You've always been part of daily shows. I think your whole career, you've only worked daily shows, right? The thing that makes the difference is the willingness to keep going and not letting yourself sink too low. You know, last night, the thing that excited me, and I have a couple of how much does it matters, but I'll we've talked about Tavares, but I'll throw Marner into that. I loved watching Marner last night. He looked creative. He looked engaged. He was trying to win puck battles. And you go, oh, he's paid to do it. Yeah. I get it. But he also took a shit kicking last year. It sounded like he was having a hard time dealing with the emotional fallout of his contract negotiation, which was pretty ugly in public. But last night, he kind of felt like rookie Marner again, like where you look at it and you go, man, he's got like this gleam in his eye and he looks like he loves hockey. And guess who was great last night? Mitch Marner.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like just those, you're right about Marner. The first 2 lines, they were just singing. Like they just, you notice them. throughout the night. You know, if you were watching intently, even if you were just watching casually, you couldn't miss those guys. And, you know, it was great to see. Like, that's the plan. That's how the Leafs are going to win it. It's young guys who are 22, 23 in their prime playing 20 plus minutes a night.
All right. Well, so, okay. All right. So this actually ties into a bunch of how much does it matter. So let's take this in order. Okay.
Sure.
How much does it matter if Joe Thornton is in his 40s?
It matters only if he's playing 17 and a half on a consistent basis, which what he did last night. You know, the smart thing is get him 14 to 15. Then you put in Hyman with Matthews and Marner, which we saw last night. It only matters if he's playing those minutes that he played last night.
I can't see him sticking with that line. I think it's a great symbolic way to start the year. But when you get into games 40 and 50 and those older legs start slowing down, like he wasn't even keeping up with them yesterday. You know, Marner and Matthews have the chance to be Hall and Oates. They have a chance to be Backstrom and Ovi. You know, they have a chance to be the preeminent pair in all of hockey. They looked so good last night. And we haven't even talked about Austin Matthews, which was a whole other thing. But I don't know. I love symbolically Thornton on that line. He certainly didn't hold them back last night. I think Matthews had 11 scoring chances. He could have had.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's easy. He was great last night. It didn't slow them down, but it would be nice to have someone who could keep up there. I'm going to put a pin in that one. We'll come back to Joe Thornton. 25 games in. How's that sound?
Yep, that works.
How much does it matter if the bottom six can't score?
Medium. You know, get the cliche train going. At some point, you're going to need balance. At some point, you're going to need those guys to greasy up some goals because, some nights you're just going to hit lots of posts if you're Matthews, Marner, Nylander, or Tavares. It doesn't matter as much this year as under Babcock because the minute distribution was much more even. But, yeah, at some point it will matter.
Okay, well, this goes to the next one. How much does it matter that Sheldon Keefe is willing to lean on his best players?
I think it's the right move. They're in their prime. Like that, we saw this. We've seen this within Chicago and Pittsburgh. You know, there's a window of 3-4 years when you can do this. Now is that time. Release the hounds, Smithers, and get those guys up there those minutes.
Release the hounds. Were you tenting your fingers when you said it?
Of course I was. I'd give it all up for a little bit more.
It's the best line ever. Okay, so I think it goes without saying TJ Brody played really great last night, and that's obviously going to be a benefit to Riley down the road. The last one, I think, is the most important question of the night. And how much does it matter?
Yep.
How much does it matter that we watch Freddie suck in January the way he sucks in October?
Yeah, that's the elephant in the room. The Suzuki goal, he looks slow. Five hole in the Tatar goal. The second Josh Anderson one, he's backing up in that. And again, a lot of these, they're not horrible goals. But can we, what I wrote was just, again, not a horrible goal, but can we have some saves? And, you know, maybe the stink of regulation, it went away because he made some great high quality saves in overtime. But yeah, like that was the biggest negative from last night.
After game 7 against Boston, Babcock was a dick for not protecting his roster and saying it'd be nice if we had a save out there. But he was right. Mm-hmm. I wonder.
He was right.
Okay, so here's one of my predictions for the year. It's not like it's a pretty loosely formed prediction. Last year, I thought that the lack of chemistry and cohesiveness on the team would ultimately be their downfall. I don't know if I was exactly right, but I was at least a little right. I think this year that they addressed a lot of issues and their roster is now good enough to be as good as they need to be. But if they falter, there's a pretty good chance it'll be because of Anderson, and the offseason will not be remembered for plugging holes. It'll be remembered for the bad decision to ride or die with Freddie Anderson. Close as I'll get to a prediction.
There's only two things that are going to derail the Maple Leafs: injuries and Freddie. Like the roster is there. You're not getting a much better roster than what they're going to present on a night to night basis. So it's going to be Freddie or injuries that's going to derail them.
You know, Muzzin is solid, and he's just going to be solid, and he's 32 now, I guess, and he's coming off of an injury, so I think it'll probably take him some time. But, you know, watching Justin Hall block Shea Weber's shot, you know, it makes your heart sing. The third pairing, I think, is a work in progress, but with all the options they have, you'd like to believe they can get at least a decent pairing set down by the playoffs. They feel like they're ready to go. They feel ready to go. Like, I don't know how much more ready you could be than this, but you could just as easily call hockey goalie. In the end, that's what's going to win you playoff games.
Yeah. When it comes to the playoffs, Freddie is going to have to, you know, on more nights, he's got to be the better goalie. And we've yet to see that.
Were there any little weird details or things or personal observations from last night that stand out in your mind, apart from game analysis?
It was weird not having the bagpipes, you know, having them on Zoom, you know, and just not having fans there. It's the one thing we've learned is that the aesthetic of sports, we're going to focus on the athleticism, and that's where everyone should start. But a close second is the fans. It's that emotional connection that's just not there.
You know what it was for me? Well, you don't, because I haven't told you yet, but it was Jeff Merrick's glasses.
Oh, yes. Amy, my girlfriend Amy, mentioned the same thing about what was with those glasses.
Oh, I loved his glasses. I thought he looked amazing. But I haven't actually seen Jeff wear glasses on TV before, and I've almost never seen him wear them in real life. He and I don't spend a lot of time together because we live, you know, pretty far apart these days. We have different schedules. But I flipped on the TV, and Jeff always looks great on TV. Like, he takes really good care of himself, and he's a good-looking guy. I love the glasses, though, and I think he needs to lean into it. He needs to go like full, like, you know, Yves Saint Laurent or something, you know, get some really big one. Get like the John. Get him some Karl Lagerfeld glasses.
Oh, yeah. Go. You know, that would be a good idea. Every game, he should have glasses that are slightly bigger than the one the night before. So you don't notice it right away. It's like how Andy Dufresne got out of Shawshank by just a little bit at a time.
Oh, that's funny. Eventually, he looks like DMC from Run DMC. He's just got the big glasses.
Yeah, just slowly over time. I did appreciate them acknowledging that that everyone thought that Elliot Friedman is dyeing his hair.
Yeah,
it looks dark. Like,
it was dark. It was dark. It's always when guys dye their hair on TV. You know, I understand why people do it, and it's not like I clearly don't think that way because I've had gray hair since I was 35. But I kind of like, I wondered about that one. I wonder how that one was going around the shop this morning at Sportsnet, because that's one of those publicly fired rockets that usually makes a bang inside of a building.
I just love that they publicly acknowledge the Twitter trolls about it. And I don't know if Elliot is or isn't dying. I'll take him for his word. He's not. He says he's not. Who cares? But it felt a little like Paul McCartney. It's like, Paul, you're 70. You don't have jet black hair. We're fine with that.
Paul McCartney. That's hilarious. He's 78 years old, and his hair looks who's got really dark hair in Hollywood? Looks like
Peter Gallagher.
That's a good one. I was thinking Colin Farrell, like young Colin Farrell. Who's got the best head of hair in Hollywood? Is it Harrison Ford?
I don't know if he does now. Like, you know, like just. What about Hemsworth when he says Thor? That's not bad.
That's pretty good. You mean when he says Clay Matthews?
Yeah, when he's full
Matthews. My wife and I have identified that every NFL defense has to have at least one white guy who looks like Thor on it. Just one. Oh, just one. The Thor guy.
Yeah. Yeah, you got the Thor guy, who you also wonder, is he on steroids? But yeah, every team's got to have one.
See, the reason I say Harrison Ford is the Hollywood champ for hair is because, like, he's pretty old now. And it's still, he can still do Indiana Jones. You know what I mean? Like, he's got legacy. He's like the Gordie Howe of hair. Mm-hmm.
I'm nervous. Let me just say that about Indiana Jones and what his role will be.
Mm-hmm. I hope that he's smart enough to do in whatever Indiana Jones comes next, what he did as Han Solo in the Star Wars movies. Just play a small role where you're symbolically handing the fedora over to someone else. I mean, they kind of did that at the end of the fourth one with Shia LaBeouf, but it sounds like Shia LaBeouf is just too far gone to really come back.
Yeah, I don't want to see him.
Yeah. Who would be a good successor to Indiana Jones? If you had to cast someone now, who'd be good?
Oh, God. Who was, I'm forgetting his name. Joseph Gordon-Levitt? Could he do it?
Oh, you know what? He's not really rugged enough, but that's actually a really good pick. Actually, Leo DiCaprio.
Leo.
He's a little older, but he's kind of got a gravitas about him now that he's older. I feel like he could do, mm-hmm. like, 40-year-old Indiana Jones.
Yeah. I'd sign up for that.
You know, when you think about that first movie, like, he doesn't look like a young guy. It's not like he's some young babe running around. Like, he looks like a man.
Yeah. Or do you go, I was going to say, do you go a complete unknown?
You just CGI.
It's a tough one.
You just CGI it. You Jar Jar Binks.
Oh, you'd be like, are they going to the Irishman, Indiana Jones?
Totally. There you go. Now there's the winner. There's the winner. Oh, look, it is Harrison Ford from 1977.
God, I just don't want to see where he still throws a punch. The huge punch noise that they always use in the Indiana Jones movies. And then he shakes his hand like, ow. It's like, listen, you're in your mid 70s. You cannot be doing this anymore.
Mm-hmm. You know, there is a comic beat that is always guaranteed when the old guy does something. And then like he thinks he's still young and then he learns he's not. There's always that beat, but it's a slippery slope between that and an Indiana Jones light movie.
Yeah, it's like in Lethal Weapon 2, I'm fine with Danny Glover saying I'm getting too old for this shit. By Lethal Weapon 5, it should just be I'm old.
Mm-hmm. And also, importantly, he's the counterbalance to the impetuousness of Riggs. See,
yeah.
If Riggs is also complaining about old, then I'm just watching a Walter Matthau movie.
You're watching a commercial that comes on CNN in the middle of the day. It's like, why is there another commercial for a softening my stool? It's like, oh, yeah, it's 12:45 on a weekday. Of course, I'm going to see older people, you know, still hiking.
I wonder if the pandemic goes on long enough, we're going to see an improvement on daytime commercials.
I'm going to tell you right now, so far, no. I can report to you.
Oh, we should talk Harden before we go too long. We should get into some NFL playoffs, but I'd love to know if you got any good AMC questions this week.
Oh, we're not. The show's been knocked back to 2 hours because Leafs lunch is back. So sure. AMC is put on hold until we go back to 3 hours. And let's, you know, I mean, AMC was used because we were doing 2 or 3 hour shows when there was literally no sports on. Now it's just all sports all the time.
Matt, I love you, but that's an enormous mistake. People don't come to you for Leafs analysis. They come to you for analysis of Shawshank and Predator and whatever else is on AMC at the time.
It's been a run of Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Like, there was a solid month where I'm like, how are we going to do another Gene Wilder question on the show where we're going to alienate everyone?
You know what I love, Matt? I love the fact that you can credibly and factually correctly ask the question, how can we do another Gene Wilder question?
I'll say this, the program director here at TSN 1050, he was a patient man. He was a patient man.
You know, you're lucky Jeff McDonald is a pop culture fanatic.
Oh, yeah.
If he didn't get your material, you'd be cooked. Well, I guess you wouldn't have the job.
Oh, yeah.
You wouldn't have the job.
You know, I've lost it many times before. His main thing is he hates when I rank fruit. He's always like, if you talk about mango one more time.
Once again. Well, now I think you've answered your own question. What does Gene Wilder think of mango?
Ooh, that is a good question. He must love it because Gene Wilder is a smart guy.
All right, let's get to Harden. Any hot takes from you?
Okay, so my opening thought is on Harden, and I know I'm going to get pushback on this. And it's funny, I don't have kids, but I have to imagine if you're a parent, and I know we don't use athletes should never be role models. Charles Barkley said it. But I do wonder what James Harden did. I think it's going to turn off a percentage of the casual basketball fan. That, you know, we've gone through this before with Paul George and Anthony Davis, but Harden took it to another level when not only did he rip his teammates, but he stopped caring on the court. He stopped shooting. His body was on the court, but his heart wasn't. What he did is the ultimate act of a loser, unprofessional. And the worst part is he got rewarded for it by getting to go to the team he wanted to be on. And I do think that there is going to be casual fans that are like, I can't watch this level of narcissism anymore.
Have you ever seen the movie Network? Have you?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Okay. So the big boss who talks to Howard Beale after Howard Beale goes crazy and he has his show and he's going to tell everyone the real truth about how life works. And eventually the big boss sits him down and says, here's the message I want you to give people. It's not that they need to fight for their rights. It's that they don't matter. It's that they don't count. And he gives this incredibly brilliant speech about how all the multinational conglomerates of the world are really controlling everything and how the world is just a big business. And he says, that's the gospel I want you to spread. In some ways, I actually think the James Harden story is good for people to see, because it is about the inequities of our system, about how everybody bends over to facilitate and help out, no matter how bad the behavior, the people who can make you money. And James Harden makes people because he wins. But here's the other part of it. Nobody likes him. He has destroyed his legacy. In fact, ironically, on this team now, the Nets, you hate Kyrie, right? And you hate Kevin Durant. And it's like in wrestling, when all the worst actors find each other. The NBA now has a clear and present villain. So as much as I think that the message of what Harden did is bad, I also think it's being sort of told in the context of, and now we root against that. The business facilitated it, but the fans are going to rebel or not. This is an interesting thought experiment in real time. The Nets will become more popular and more hated the way the Heat did. And this is good for sports.
I wonder, and because, that is the obvious, you know, you need the villain. Nets are a greater villain than the Heat ever were, than even Golden State. It's like we all hated Joffrey. We thought he was the worst. And here comes Ramsey cutting off a dude's dick, you know, and that's kind of what the Nets are. But I do wonder, is there a breaking point? Is there a point where you can go too far where casual fans are like, no, I have enough other options. I can't handle seeing that being rewarded. And is there, you know, will there be a percentage of parents who are like, oh, I want to keep my kid away from the toxic environment that is Harden? Because like, if I was a parent, I wouldn't want my kid to learn any lesson from what's going on with the Houston Rockets and the Brooklyn Nets.
Remember when Latrell Sprewell tried to choke PJ Carlissimo?
Yep.
And people said, this is going to be the end of the NBA because people will just not stand for that kind of behavior. I think they've done okay since then.
Yep. Oh yeah. No, they have. I mean, as I said, there'll be pushback and I might be in the wrong. I'd love to know, you know, was there a drop off after Sprewell? Because this one just feels, you know, what makes it feel gross to me was John Wall, you know, a guy who hasn't played since December of 2018. He's trying to recapture lost time, and his biggest adversary hasn't been an Achilles. It's been James Harden. It was DeMarcus Cousins coming out and saying the disrespect didn't just start at that press conference. It's been going on so long. It's that Harden, it's not just he disrespected the game. He disrespected his teammates. When LeBron James left, he was a free agent. You know, and that one was, and I didn't like that as well, mostly just because of how they did the messaging with the, you know, the decision. This goes beyond, this goes a slap in the face of sports.
In order to have a good to fight for, You have to have bad actors on the verge of winning. Mm-hmm. There has to be a villain worth fighting. You know, the reason why Luke Skywalker is such a great hero and Han Solo is such a great hero is because Darth Vader is such a great villain. He could win.
Yep.
He could actually mm-hmm. win. If you never believe that the bad side could win, why would you root for the good side? Sometimes yep. the heel oh. has to hold the belt.
Would it feel like a satisfying NBA season if the Nets won?
It'd be awful. It'd be awful. But it would also mean when some team finally knocks them off, like think about how sweet it was for the Chicago Bulls when they finally beat the Pistons. It was
mm-hmm. yep.
it was made sweeter because they lost. And then they finally figured out how to win. Just as someone will finally figure out how to beat Brooklyn if they are as good as some people think they might be. I'm not convinced, but we'll see.
I'm not convinced as well because, I mean, first off, Kyrie, I don't know if Kyrie Irving cares more about basketball or Sex in the City. He's not playing any games, but he was on some Zoom message with some local New York politicians. One of them was Cynthia Nixon or Miranda from Sex in the City. And Kyrie hasn't told his coach where he is. You know, when asked Steve Nash, hey, Steve, do you think Kyrie's going to be back? Steve's answer was, sure. You know, like, that
that's
was
the best answer, by the way, sure. you've nailed it, Matt. You've nailed it. The wild card in all this is not whether those three guys could figure out how to play together in the pursuit of a title. I'm sure they could. But the Kyrie is the wild card. And because it's COVID and everything is so weird right now, we're not really realizing how bizarre his behavior is. There's just been other stuff to focus on. But Kyrie's behavior with the Nets this year, it's a car skidding all over black ice on the highway. He's mm-hmm. all over the place. And I don't yeah. think they have a big three. I think they have a big 2.4. A big 2.4.
Yeah, I wonder, like, we love Wayne Simmons because you saw him care. Does James Harden care about basketball or just care about himself? Does Kyrie Irving care about anything beyond him being seen as an artist? I mean, I'm sorry, Kyrie, you're an artist the way someone who works at Subway is a sandwich artist.
That's really funny. Everybody in that position is coddled to a certain degree, some mm-hmm. to greater degree. I was just reading about Johnny Depp the other day and how toxic he's become in Hollywood. And a producer, you know, these people always speak out well after the course and anonymously. But he said, you know what? Everybody here is catered to, but nobody's been catered to the way Johnny Depp has been. And now it's come around to bite right. him on the ass. And I kind of feel like there's a bit of Kyrie and James Harden in that. I think Harden's much worse than Kyrie. I think Kyrie is complex, and I think James Harden is an asshole.
But Kyrie, if he's also not telling his coach where he is, and apparently at a party for his sister's birthday without a mask on, I mean, that's just so irresponsible and kind of an asshole move.
You know, but Kyrie's also the guy with the players, you know, the Zoom call with 100 players talked about whether they should resume under the Black Lives Matters protests and how they should move forward. And he spoke intelligently and had a lot of respect amongst his players. Like, what I find interesting is when NBA players are honest what they think, they all like Kyrie and they all want to play with him. And they think that he's a basketball genius. They all think James Harden is a basketball genius. And with the exception of Kevin Durant, not too many people want to play with him. He's kind of like Russ Westbrook, but worse.
Kyrie Irving is the only guy I know that has walked out on LeBron James and Kevin Durant. Think about that.
I agree. And I think what it speaks to is that there's something that ticks within that guy that doesn't tick the way it usually does in the NBA. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. It may not be a thing you can win with, but I don't want to judge it until I understand it. But to your point earlier, what Harden did, I can judge that because it was straight up a dick move.
Oh, yeah. His last thing he said was, yeah, this team isn't good enough. Well, you'd be winning more games if you weren't in Atlanta or Vegas when everyone was in camp. And if you showed up in shape and you played your ass off, the team would be winning more games. But you decided, okay, I'll play a bunch of games where I don't shoot. And I'll say horrible things publicly to my team about my teammates, and that'll accelerate me getting traded. And he got what he wanted, and it's just like it just leaves such a sick taste if you're a sports fan.
As Raptors fans, we lived through this with Vince, and I think Harden was much worse than Vince was. Vince kept most of his stuff quiet, but for his sort of whining on the court and looking unhappy. But he mostly shut up and did his politicking behind the scenes, which is how it should be done. I mean, Victor Oladipo wanted out of Indiana, but he went out and worked hard. And I don't think anybody begrudges him his trade request. He wanted out of Indiana. You know, Sabonis has gotten so good and they were able to get back Caris LeVert, so Indiana's happy. You know, that's a situation where a star player on a huge contract is not happy, but there are no bad feelings. Doesn't happen enough. I find it really hard to say that I'm supporting the Lakers when I think just a few seasons ago, Anthony Davis was James Harden.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Davis was horrible as well.
You know, I gave a big speech earlier about how, you know, there's heroes and there's villains and, you know, the sort of villain narrative of the time is the privileged few who don't give a shit about everybody else and how Harden is kind of like that. So gifted, couldn't care about anybody else. I mean, it feels like this is a moment in time where there's a lot of villains who could be described that way in and out of sports. But at the same time, to your point about how do we look at the league, player empowerment's gone just a little too far, hasn't it?
Oh, it has. It absolutely has. And I think a lot of people don't want to admit that. And especially if you're in part of it's generational. If you're younger and you're in this business, you probably like player empowerment more. And I understand that. But it is swung so much that all it's kind of doing is it's also alienating the fans. Like we hear over and over again, the fans are the most important. The fans are the most important. Well, I mean, James Harden gave two middle fingers to every fan, and he got rewarded. Like, it just, and it goes back to my point, and I might be wrong. I fully understand that. But is there a breaking point where this goes from, oh, it's cool, we've got this great villain? I mean, at the very least, we respected Darth Vader. He worked hard to be Darth. You know, we had respect for him. James Harden feels like a villain like the Koch brothers. They're a villain, but we don't, you know, there's not even that cool villain side to root for.
You know, I hesitate to say this because of how bad it makes me look. But, you know, I think I've mentioned to you on the pod a couple of times that my fitness goals is to look like Kyle Lowry because I'm a pretty guy. But, you know, I've got, you know, he's got some muscle and he looks good. He looks good. Kyle looks good. But you could see, like, he's a cheeseburger away from putting 25 back on, right? As soon as he opens that door crack, he's the horse is out of the barn. I wanted to look like Kyrie Irving. I wanted to look like Kyle Lowry, but COVID Bob looks like James Harden.
We all look like James Harden.
I even got the beard going, though, buddy. I got the long beard. I got the... you know, I am a dad and I have a bod, so it's not a surprise I have a dad bod. But I looked at him walking off the court the other day and it was like looking in a mirror and I thought, oh, I gotta do something. I gotta buy some consomme.
Let me do 10 push-ups. I gotta get something going on here.
Seriously, like my fitness goals, I finally, you know, shame is such a great motivator at a certain degree.
It is.
You know, at a certain point we all need it in our lives. And my shame actually didn't come from looking at myself. It came from looking at James Harden.
Normally it's from looking in the mirror. This time it was looking at TNT.
Oh, man, that's too funny. What does this mean for the Raptors?
You know what's funny? It's gone to the point, like a week and a half ago, I was full sports hypocrite. Where I'm like, no, I want James Harden. And then after the last 72 hours, like, nope, don't want him, don't care. What this means for the Raptors, it means you tread water, you keep hope, you keep developing, you keep developing OG and Siakam. You hope Siakam continues to play like he has. And you wait to pounce on the Bradley Beal, or you wait to trade Kyle Lowry if you can get back a crazy return. That I think you just sit and you wait.
You made such a smart point a couple pods ago when you said this year for the Raptors is the year that we thought they would have last year.
Yeah.
All kinds of roster questions. It feels like we went into the last season saying, oh, you got to get rid of Serge, you got to get Gasol and think about the future. And they played so well. It just blew all of those ideas out of the water. This is the Raptors we thought we were getting last year.
Yep.
And Pascal went all of a sudden to like a dark horse from a dark horse MVP candidate to a guy who's talented and you hope becomes like a really, you know, perennial all-star type. And that's kind of who he is this year. You know, that's the Pascal we thought we were getting last year, is a guy who's developing and learning how to succeed in the league. you know, he shot forward so fast, it kind of skewed who he really is, I guess. I don't know. That's a weird one to read. I don't know how to read that one, but clearly the Pascal of this year is the one we thought we were getting last year.
Well, he's played much better. He's played much better on the West Coast. Unfortunately, they went 1-3. If you look at the underlying numbers, they are better than 2-8. And when Kyle Lowry, it's funny, when Kyle Lowry says we're better than our record, I believe him, and the Raptors deserve the benefit of the doubt. Last year with the Leafs, when they said we're better than how we're playing, I'm like, prove it. I don't believe you.
You know, Jeff Merrick, making his second appearance on the pod today, he always used to say, maybe this was a hockey saying generally, but he used to say, losing streaks start when you stop winning the games you should have lost. And winning streaks start when you start winning the games that you should win, like when the ball starts to roll your way. And I think what we're seeing is they're losing these close games. It will turn. Some of those shots will start dropping. We'd be talking about the fight back clutch Raptors, if not but for a couple last second missed buckets. Some will drop, some won't. They feel like a 500 team, and that's probably where they're going to wind up. And that's good enough to make the playoffs in the East.
It is. And that's how they feel. They feel 500. They got like back-to-back against the Pelicans. They got Dallas and a couple against the Heat, a couple against the Pacers. But yeah, I think they're a 500 team. Van Vliet's look good. Siakam's look better. Lowry's look pretty good. It's just the centers, and we need more from offense from OG and Anobi.
And Norm.
Yeah, and Norm. Yes. Yeah, a lot more from Norm. 100%.
You know, and those are all big ifs because maybe some of them happen and some of them don't. The nice story of the year so far has been Chris Boucher, but if we're thinking of him becoming a starter in the league, I thought the nice story is if he came out of obscurity to just be a good part of a decent bench mob. You know, I don't even need a starter, and I don't think he is one, not long term. You just want him to be like a guaranteed seventh guy on your team. If Boucher's starting and contributing, you're not good enough.
There is a correlation between for every story out there that's the Boucher looking to do more and Boucher exploding. And for every one of those stories, it means the Raptors were probably losing. You know, the best version of this team is Baines or Len being a hell of a lot better and Boucher continuing what he's doing on the bench. He's a skinny guy. You don't want him being the one banging night in and night out.
I thought Baines would be better. Len is who I thought he was. Going into the season, you knew five wasn't going to be it's not even that we lost Gasol and that so much of the offense went through him or so much of the defense kind of stopped with him. It's not just the fact that we lost a good player. We replaced him with a bad player. That's a big loss. Like as net deficits go, that's a right-left combo. And we're not good enough to survive that sort of thing. Like people talk about how DeAndre Jordan isn't good enough to anchor the Nets, you know, especially now that Jared Allen's been traded. And maybe that's true, but who cares? Like, look at the guys around them.
Oh, yeah. Well, the margin of error was smaller for the Raptors. And when you go from Ibaka and Gasol to Lennon Baines, you know why they're losing these close games? It's those margins. And that drop off there is a direct correlation as much as Siakam missing two shots at the end of the last two games.
Siakam hasn't been himself, and he doesn't feel like a great NBA player, but it is nice to see he's doing better. The OG can't score is an issue. Mm-hmm. And the Norm isn't scoring is a really big issue because they got no bench.
Bob?
Yeah.
Before we go, we got like 5 minutes, and we got to talk a little Buffalo Bills. I just want to give a quick reminder to everyone out there. If you are looking for a lawyer, our lawyer, Jeff Pollack, is a sponsor of this podcast. He's a fantastic lawyer, been in business for ages. It's a small law firm that will definitely fill all your law and lawyerly needs and other words that sound better than ones I'm using. Anyway, the point is 416.
Legal.
Yes.
I think you want legal.
Legal needs, 416-777-0088, 416-777-0088 is the number, or jeffpollack.com. That's Jeff with a G, jeffpollack.com. Bob, how excited are you, Josh Allen versus Lamar Jackson?
Excited, but nervous. You know, like I think the Ravens are peaking right now, and I don't want to face them. They're one, like other than the Chiefs, they're the other team that I don't want to see right now. I don't think the Bills are going to win. Don't think they played great in that first round, but they played good enough to win.
Yeah.
And I think if they play that game against the Ravens, then I think they're going to lose, and maybe even big, because I think Lamar Jackson is a generational talent who's got a point to prove, and those guys are always dangerous. That's it, though.
Josh Allen was...
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, Josh Allen was incredible against the Colts. Almost no one else on that team, not the defense, not the running game. All of it was poor. The Colts were the better team, but the Bills won. But yeah, I mean, you're going to need Josh Allen to be at that level again.
And I actually expect he will be. But to your point, I think it's the defense that's going to let us down, which was weird because last year the story was flipped and you had this amazing defense and Josh Allen's growing pains. I think in the end that the Ravens are going to be able to score enough on that Buffalo defense that even Josh Allen isn't going to pull this one out of the fire. But I expect a good game, though. I do think it's going to be a slugfest. But who knows? When you say that, it could turn around and be like a 17-14 game. Who the hell knows? It's a good year for the Bills no matter what, because the best thing you can have in the NFL is a quarterback to build around, and they have that. They went out and got Stephon Diggs, who's been amazing, and everybody else you can find. Everybody else you can find. They have what you need. It's a great year for the Bills. I hope they go all the way, but we'll be talking about them for the next 5 years. And what's really going to be exciting is when Miami starts to get better, because they're almost there. And the AFC East isn't going to be the... it hasn't been since Rex Ryan's Jets that there's actually been some intra-divisional competition, and I think that's going to change, and it's going to be the Bills and the Dolphins in the years to come. And you know, watching Josh Allen against Tua is going to be damn exciting.
I hope so. I hope Tua gets better, get him some weapons, and I mean, that was a bit of a bummer, was he didn't hit the heights we thought, but you know, he's also coming off a huge injury last year at Alabama. And the funny thing is, Bob, is that next year, just like this year, the Patriots will have the worst quarterback in the division.
Yeah, isn't that so weird?
Yeah.
They're going to get that wide receivers coach from the Denver Broncos who had to fill in when the first three guys were out. He's going to be their quarterback next year.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the practice squad wideout. I can't remember his name.
Yeah. Too funny. What I find really interesting about the Bills right now is that they're doing this, and it's so bad, and we in Toronto kind of feel this because our team's really good and we can't go to the games, is that poor Bills Mafia has been waiting so many years for this kind of run and this kind of team, and they can't go in public and enjoy it.
Yep. No, it's true. They have to sit in their backyards and just, you know, and just throw themselves on the table, you know, with no one around to cheer them.
You know, when Alabama won and you saw the pictures of the crowd celebrating afterwards, you just think, idiots. But then honestly, Matt, honestly, what would Toronto do? Maybe not you, but Toronto. What would Toronto do if we were in the middle of a COVID outbreak as we are now, but still, and the Leafs won? Would we have no parade after 60 years of parade jokes?
Oh, we would all be on the streets. We would all be on the, it would be like it would be a giant Roman orgy of blue and white if the Leafs won the cup.
And everyone would convince themselves by wearing blue and white masks that we'd be safe. And then like, but if you're MLSE, like, can you even organize something and not look like you're encouraging bad behavior or dangerous behavior? I don't think you
Bob, can. I'm going to end this all now because this is such a Leaf thing. The Leafs start at 1-0 and we're ending the podcast with talking about parades. We got to end this now, Bob.
You know, it's amazing, Matt, and I'll let it go. I didn't even notice that I had done it.
Yep.
That's so deeply in our DNA it is.
It comes right back. You know what, Bob? It's like loving fights. It's somewhere inside of you, and it just comes out without you realizing it.
Oh, my God. I was planning parade routes.
Goodbye, Bob.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.